Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. Welcome to the 8th episode of DevelopPod. And, I'm Christian, your host in Brighton in the UK. Today we're very lucky to have Silvana Richardson in the virtual studio, Head of Teacher Development of Bell Schools UK, who's talking about creating an organisation-wide culture of teacher development. So whether you're a teacher, teacher trainer, or manager, I'd recommend that you listen with a mind to any ideas that may be useful for you to adapt into your field of work. Pausing here to gather pen and paper for notes, tea and biscuits for refreshment, is of course optional but highly recommended. Welcome to Silvana Richardson. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you and thank you very much for inviting me.
Such a pleasure. So I understand you're in Cambridge at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit about your role there in Cambridge?
I'm the head of teacher development for Bell. So even though I live in Cambridge and my office is in Cambridge, my role is across the school. So I also have a role supporting the London school. I have oversight of our education projects department, which runs, for example, Delta Online, teacher development project, and our young learner provision. So I'm head of teacher development across the board, really.
Okay, that's quite a massive job, I imagine. You've joined me today to talk about your culture of teacher development there, which you try to promote in the organization, and more specifically, setting up a system of teacher development and various components of that. First of all, perhaps you could tell us how often you either create or review your teacher development program.
I would say this is an ongoing process, and we do make sure that we've got tools and procedures to make sure that we do evaluate the CPD program. So just to give you an example, at the end of every Friday, you know, the classic inset session, every teacher fills in an online form and we ask questions about not just the quality of the CPD input or provision or whatever happens to be that day, but also about the impact. So we're also asking them about, you know, what impact will this have in your practice? So that's one way in which we evaluate our program. But more systematically and looking at the whole program, if you like, we've got annual reviews. So at the end of each year and in preparation for the next CPD cycle, we look at, you know, what worked, what didn't, and sometimes for some pieces we do specific pieces of work. So for example, I'll tell you later if you want, we've been doing lots of work on supported experiments, which is an approach to teacher research. And at the end of the first and second cycles, we wanted to know, you know, more about how teachers felt about whether this was a useful way, you know, of learning for them. So we did teacher interviews and we found out that 80% of the teachers actually felt that it was a useful approach, that they were learning. But we also got a lot of very interesting qualitative information about, you know, what else we could do, what suggestions they were making, the things that didn't work, the things that concerns that they had, etc. So that's one way, for example, in which we make sure that when we look at evaluation, it's not just me in my office. We look at what teachers think, we consult the managers, we have meetings.
So it sounds like there's input from many different avenues, lots of different sources. Would you say it's more top down, bottom up, or you can't put it into necessarily those categories?
No, yeah, I can, actually. I would say it's both. We try to make it balanced. So I would say we do two strands. One, which we call CPD directed, and that is the institutional CPD. Basically, we've got a group that we call the Education Steering Group, which sets up the educational direction of Bell as a group of schools with its different business streams and priorities. And as part of that group, we identify what the priorities are. It's important that every teacher develops their expertise, their knowledge. So that is a bit top down. We're very keen on developing excellence in teaching because we know there's a very strong link between excellent teachers and improved learning outcomes. So for us, we identify what we believe and think is, you know, excellence in teachings, and therefore every teacher should develop based on that scale. So that's, if you like, the top-down bit. And it's not just the teachers and managers, of course. So it's all about learning together and learning the same thing. And then we have the what we call CPD choice, the teachers being in the driving seat of their professional development. So there is time for people to actually choose what they want to focus on. And that's part of what we do, for example, on Fridays.
And how do the teachers in reality actually choose the components of their CPD or how they go about doing that, the process?
So they can choose what to focus on, the topic of what they want to study in more depth or what they want to investigate. And they can also choose an approach. So they can choose you know, whether they want to do a supported experiment, whether they want to do action research. And now we're piloting a third strand, which is a lesson study. So they can choose what to focus on in terms of a broader area. Then we help and support. The other thing is, you know, some teachers are really good at identifying very clearly exactly what the issue that they want to focus on is. Others need more help and support. So it's about also helping them decide, you know, within this broad area, for example, I don't know, differentiation, massive. Okay, what particular area they want us to look at in more depth.
So what is the mechanism for them deciding what to focus on, if you like? Are there one-to-one interviews to create a learning development program for them?
Mm-hmm. What we do is for the CPD choice, it's a time in the year and we spend it as a school. So for example, the Cambridge School are doing it right now. Between now, we started a couple of weeks ago and it's until the end of the year. So during that time, we've got, first of all, if you like, a brainstorming meeting around, okay, what approach do you want to adopt? We talk about possible topics because sometimes it helps when people have a long list to choose from. So there's a bit of a brainstorming. And then we go to the individual level. So people thinking with the help of a supporter who's either the, we've got a couple of advanced practitioners who are basically very experienced and very knowledgeable and expert teachers and teacher trainers, the academic managers as well. It's a bit of an individual plan there. You know, basically they narrow down that topic into a research question and then they decide how they want to implement it. So what type of experiment over more or less how long, what data are they going to collect, how are they going to evaluate it. And the other choice is, the other area of choice is how they want to present that information. So if they want to, you know, put it up on Moodle as a report, if they want to write an article for a magazine, if they want to present in a conference, etc.
Are the teachers asked to and normally required to present the information that they discover?
Our approach is, part of our culture is, we've got something called the Bell Way, which is a set of principles that state loudly and clearly the way we do things and who we are as an organization. And one of the organizational principles is called organizational learning. And we say that we continually refresh and renew our professional practice. And we very strongly believe that my learning is not just for me. Mm-hmm. But it's something that hopefully it's of value to others, to other teachers, and that it can be embedded in the organization. So yes, there's a very strong emphasis on sharing what we have learned. But, you know, we've had sessions where people, you know, prepared posters or they talked about it. So it's about finding ways that teachers feel comfortable sharing that. But we also promote the possibility of what I have learned as an individual teacher is of value to me, to my class, to my school, to Bell as a whole. And that's why we also encourage that sharing across schools through Moodle, but also to the profession as a whole. You know, just go beyond, if people dare and want to write up, to present at conferences, to sort of socialize their knowledge in a wider platform, which also has a very positive effect on their own perception. You know, I've learned, I've developed some content relevant knowledge, and I can share it with my colleagues who can also learn from me in my work.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember Adrian Underhill talking about the learning organization way back, and that inspired me as an academic manager in Brighton. And you're talking about very much the same thing, if you like, a culture-wide system of teacher development, but not only for the teacher, but the whole organization, essentially.
Yeah.
Why do
you
think that is so important within organizations, in particular Bell?
I think, as I said, you know, we can always be better. You know, we can always become better teachers. And that benefits me, it benefits my students, but it also benefits my colleagues, and it benefits the whole organization. It's also a powerful, I mean, if you look at it from a business perspective, it's also good at giving you visibility as a business. You know, for me, it's really, really important that we learn from each other and with each other.
And do all the teachers within the organization get involved? Realistically, is that possible?
Yes, because the organizational learning principle said our principles, our practices and our procedures are coherent with this. So this brings up issues around pay, for example. So we can't really be talking and filling our mouths with the value of CPD if that is not factored in the pay. So part of, you know, for every hour that our teachers teach, they're paid 1.5 hours. And that 0.5 is about, you know, attending professional development and developing. So that, you know, enables people to actually feel that they're being valued at that level as well, and that's important. That said, it becomes a bit more difficult with the ad hocs, the ad hoc teachers who don't, you know, you can only work with a permanent contract. Yeah, you know, sometimes they come, they're here and sometimes they're not. But interestingly, and this is about the culture, you see, I've seen teachers who don't have work and come to CPD anyway because they see value in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's talk about some of the tools you use now within the organization for teacher development and narrow the focus a little more. You mentioned a few times there supported experiments and lesson study. Could you tell us a little bit more about those two things?
Sure. Well, supported experiments is a model of teacher research, which I would say is like a distant cousin from action research. Was developed by Jeff Petty here in the UK for the further education sector. And if people are familiar with the action research cycle, it's not very dissimilar, but there is a greater focus on those words, the support and the experiment. So let's begin with experiment first. It's all about experimenting with something, an intervention, an approach, a technique, a strategy that's new to me as a teacher. We encourage teachers to think of things that for which there is some evidence that they work, but you know, it's got to be something that you choose and that's important to you and that you want to develop. And so the cycle begins with exploring the current context. So in my class, thinking about something that bothers me, an issue, something that I've been interested in and haven't been able to explore yet and I want to look at in more depth. Then you explore the pedagogy. So what else is out there? So let me give you an example. I'm thinking of a cycle of supported experiments that a colleague of mine did. So she realized that she wasn't really going anywhere much with a concept checking question. You know, she was aware that she wasn't really getting whole class feedback, you know, fly with the fastest, really, concept checking questions. So she decided she wanted to look more at how else she could get feedback from the learners about, you know, whether they were understanding. So the second, as I said, the second stage is looking at what else is out there, explore the pedagogy. So what else could she be doing apart or on top of? You know, you look at different sources, you look at some research or an article or, I don't know, the internet, whatever, a book. And then you decide, okay, well, she wanted to narrow it down and she wanted to experiment with using mini whiteboards. Because mini whiteboards, first of all, they give the chance for every student to answer the same question, yeah, rather than just one or two. But also it gives the teacher immediate visual feedback. So it's a very simple experiment, moving from throwing a question at the ether and undirected questioning and, you know, the first students who are fast and loud answer to a more sort of, you know, sort of let's give people time to think, let's give people time to formulate, articulate an answer, and then we all show our work together. So very, very simple.
Essentially more differentiated and inclusive strategy.
But it's not necessarily a massive research question that I've got to answer. Like, you know, I think, you know, in an action research cycle, there will be much more focus on, you know, getting the research question right. And then this is more the focus on experimenting with something new. So conducting the experiment, analyzing the results, but again, not in a sort of PhD kind of level. Mm-hmm. Of it's a simpler kind of, okay, did it work? How did it work? So in this case, my colleague, she videoed herself using the mini whiteboards. That's what she decided to do. And she found, A, that it slowed down the pace massively, because, you know, if you move from throwing a question and getting an oral answer to asking a question and having to write it down and then, you know, count down 3, 2, 1, or show me the answer and then reading the answers, it does slow down the pace. So for her then, it became an exercise in discerning, okay, so do I have to be more careful about when to use it? For what questions I need to use it. You know, we said, when it's yes, no questions, does it really make sense to use mini whiteboards? So kind of, you know, refining, analyzing to refine and to understand where it did work, where it didn't work, what it could work for. Cycle two, let's do it again. Now let's focus on, you know, the really important questions that whereby students need time to think. And the beauty of supported experiments is that the teacher decides when to stop. So the teacher says, okay, now I'm comfortable, I'm confident, I've tried, I think I've cracked it, and I have something, I have a conclusion that's worthwhile sharing. Equally, the focus is on deliberate practice, on this idea that there are no geniuses, And it's all about the craft in a way. You know, it's all about developing the skill by practicing and by learning from the practice. So the last stage is to basically share it with the colleagues, hopefully to embed it into the organization's practice. Interestingly, when we've done sort of halfway shares where experiments are in progress and people tell others, you know, I struggle with this and what do you think? It's a very motivating session where people really are inspired by some of other teachers' experiments, and then they go on to go in more depth with a similar experiment.
Sorry, the particular teacher you were talking about who was experimenting with mini whiteboards, has she concluded her cycles? Okay, and did she present, and if so, how?
Yeah, this was a couple of years ago. I think she basically did an insert session, and she also produced a mini report which we shared on Moodle. And her conclusion was use mini whiteboards only when the questions are worth spending the time on. So the deep questions, important questions, and the questions where I really do want evidence that everybody, I want an answer from everybody, and I want to know what everybody's thinking. And when it's a yes, no question or a quick question, use other techniques, use thumbs, whatever. You still have the visible feedback, the immediate feedback, but you don't need that thinking time and that more deliberate thinking. Very simple. Just to give you an example of how simple it can be.
It's been very practical. Yeah.
You know, a busy language school can do it, you know, and you don't need the best expert in teacher research to come and help you.
Yeah.
Now, the other element is the supported experiment. So throughout the cycle, we've got supporters. So each teacher has got a sounding board, as well as the informal moments. We've got more formal moments, like tutorials, if you like, where the supporter gives help and structure and guidance or whatever they might happen to need. So for example, in some cases, it's more about, what can I do my supported experiment in? And you know, and the answer is, well, go back to your QA if you can't think of anything inspiring. Go back to your, you know, QA or quality assurance observation report and see what areas for development were identified there, which one really excites you, which from that to saying, oh, I don't know what to look at. Okay, have you thought about looking at ELTJ, or, you know, what about giving them some guidance with their reading for exploring their context, or sometimes just listening and asking interesting questions to help them narrow down or think more or whatever. But that support is always there.
There's so many things to look at, essentially. And what comes out to me is that this can all be hugely motivating for the teachers, that they can do it within the practical realms of their classroom, and it doesn't take much extra effort.
Exactly.
And that inquisitive mind keeps them going as teachers.
Exactly. We hope to develop a mindset that becomes embedded in their own practice, and that's a normalized practice, you know? So it needs the time, it needs the space, it needs a dialogue.
Sure. And it's self-directed, and so potentially is ongoing because of that. But as you say, in some institutions you hear, sadly so often, that teachers don't feel as though they're paid for the time for training. And so there is the potential lack of commitment with that. Yes, they need to be not only paid for the time, but that needs to be embedded and valued. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the flip side as well, Christian, is that there are other parts in the world where people actually pay for their CPD. So it's all about motivation at the end of the day. I think it's also about, if you like, recruiting the right people in your organization. That, you know, from the word go, in the interview, you say this is a very important part of the culture. And you really, you know, we want committed people, people who are committed to developing their own practice, improving their own teaching, you know, generating their own knowledge about teaching and sharing it with others. And that's the kind of teacher we want.
Exactly. It all starts there. So let's zoom in on lesson study, if we may, because that's something I think our listeners would like to hear a bit more about.
Yeah. This is our first pilot. And at the moment, because we pilot a lot and we're also very experimental. So at the moment, it's only the advanced practitioners and the teacher mentors who are experimenting with it, so that then we can roll it out. But it is an approach. It's a very old approach, actually. It originated in Japan at the end of the 19th century. But it was brought to the UK through somebody called Peter Dudley in the context of assessment for learning. So it's another approach to teacher research, but it's very classroom-based and second learner-focused. And that's the beauty of it. And also, it taps into one of the factors that the research says that's the most effective in teacher learning, which is peer collaboration. So it's a group of teachers, minimum two, ideally three teachers, working together with the same class and planning, teaching, observing, and evaluating a number of lesson study lessons. So for example, at the moment, the team that's piloting it are looking into the effect of, this sounds very sort of zen, the effect of going with the moment on learners. You ask a question and a student throws an answer and you really think, oh, this is a wonderful opportunity to go there and do something about it. So what they're studying at the moment is they have to decide on, if you like, three case study learners. So somebody, what lesson study tries to do is to move beyond the teacher and teaching and looking at the effect and the impact of a technique, a strategy, whatever, on learners and individual learners.
At the end of the day,
exactly.
Right?
So it's directing teachers' attention to the impact of what I'm doing. As John Hattie says, know thy impact. You know, the impact of what I'm doing on student A, who's gifted and talented, for example, student B, who would say, I don't know, is average or not, student C, who is really struggling with this or has a special educational need. So the impact of this particular intervention on three different learners, observed throughout the lesson by the different, you know, so if I'm teaching, my other two colleagues are observing, then it's their turn to teach and observe. So it's a constant cycle of focusing on the impact of an intervention on teaching, on learning and the learners. And that's why I think it's so beautiful and I really wanted to go down this road and try it so that we all move away from your board work is amazing. It takes the focus away from the teacher and the teaching. And I think that that's what it's got to give. I can't tell you about the results yet because we're in the process of doing it, but I just wanted to bring it up because I think there's a lot of potential in it and we want to offer yet another approach to our staff for them to experiment.
It sounds like you've resurrected the idea of lessons study from what I understand of that and made it much more personal. And if you like, you built in an element of team teaching and peer mentorship, if you like.
Exactly, exactly.
I think this sounds much more of a collaborative mentorship.
Yes. And a very strong emphasis on we're all equal.
Yes, yes.
We're all doing it and we're all equal and we're all learning.
It does sound like a very interesting, but potentially quite an expensive, for most organisations, quite an expensive tool, right?
That's what we want to learn as well from the pilot. And today we had a meeting, actually, about it. And we were saying, well, maybe we can't all be working on lesson study at the same time. Because it means that, for example, if a group of three teachers are working in one class together, it means that maybe the director of studies and the assistant director of studies have got to go and me have got to go and cover.
Yep.
So maybe we can do it one group at a time. And maybe how do we time it to make it work? We are very solution focused here.
Well, I'm only glad that they're not all doing their lesson study this afternoon. Otherwise, I'd have lost my job. So perhaps you can zoom in on something you mentioned to me earlier, something called learning walks. What's that all about? That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, that interestingly enough, that's another one that could be construed as very top down, but we found a way of making it equally developmental. So a learning walk is an observation of the whole organization with a focus on a very specific topic. Okay. So for example, let me tell you what we did last year. So last year we did a lot of CPD work around tutorials and conducting really effective tutorials because we felt that unlike the classroom, where it's a very collective moment unless you teach one-to-one, tutorial is the moment where you do make the most difference to individuals, you know, the goals that you set, in the conversation that you have, and yet a lot of observation, either developmental or quality assurance, deals with classrooms and classroom teaching and learning and never on the tutorial. So we felt that we wanted to do a learning walk around tutorials. So how do you observe tutorials for the whole organization in 1 week? So what we did was we asked every teacher to record one tutorial. We uploaded, of course, you know, we had to go through all the consents and all that, permission from the students to be recorded, etc., etc. And what we did, we got each teacher to self-assess their tutorial on the basis of success criteria that we developed together as part of our CPD. So they self-assessed against those success criteria. And then we shared that with a critical friend. So somebody else in the organization listening to the same tutorial, reading what the teacher had written, and giving them feedback on that. And then we anonymized all that data and we collected it and collated it to identify how much, and you were asking me about evaluation before, how much of the CPD work we had done on tutorials was actually embedded in the practice of all the teachers. It was amazing to discover individual strengths that were under the radar for such a long time. So, for example, there was one of our teachers. Before each tutorial, she produced a worksheet that focused on a specific aspect of teaching and learning. So it's about understanding individual strengths, bringing them to light and saying, look, this is a good practice that we don't know. And equally, identifying where we still need to go and what else we need to do about it. So it's a whole organization exercise where we all get involved, teachers, the students, managers, and it helps us understand.
Sounds really interesting. Are there any occasions where learning walks will happen on a very physical level, where a teacher will walk around the organization and say, choose one topic, and they literally pop into different lessons?
Yeah, I mean, that's in how you set it up, really. We like to do it the whole school on the same topic,
right?
Because, again, it's about evaluating the impact of CPD. But there's no reason why you can't do that. Absolutely.
Okay. We won't have time to talk about all the different tools you use within the organization. We've spoken about three of there. But perhaps you could just tell us about the other tools that you use, if you like, just in a list form, most of which I think our listeners will have heard of before.
Mm-hmm. As I said, for example, supported experiments we do in-house, but we also encourage teachers to apply for an external action research scheme. So some of our teachers, at least one teacher every year, does the English UK Cambridge Assessment research scheme. We also do peer observations. We do developmental observations. We do video observations.
Yeah.
We do things like reading groups. We call it ABC, Academic Book Club, where people read not a whole book, but a chapter or an article, but with a head on implementation. So what does this say to our practice? You know, how can we implement this? What are the implications, etc.? We also do the typical standardization sessions, you know, for exam classes and things like that. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else right now, but I'm sure after finishing speaking, I will think of five more.
Plenty for people to chew on right now, I think. And last but not least, you spoke with Gabrielle Maggioli at IATEFL 2018, and you had an acronym, INSPIRE Teacher Development. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. It was trying to make it a memorable mnemonic, really. So I stands for impactful, that professional development has got to be always focused on impact. N stands for needs-based. You're testing me now. N stands for needs-based. What are the needs of the teachers and the learners? What is it that they really need? The S stands for sustained. Sustained has got two dimensions, if you like. So the sustained over time. If you really want to develop skills for transferability and improve learning outcomes, you need to stay with it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And also the other dimension of sustained is sustaining and supporting. So not dropping. So I taught you about this today. Go away. Good luck. You know, that you sustain the teachers by providing support and scaffolding and opportunities to experiment and opportunities to come back and discuss what worked and what didn't and evaluate. So that's the S, sustained.
The P?
E is for peer collaborative. So it's, you know, what I was talking about with reference to, for example, lesson study, you know, the joint planning, peer teaching, team teaching, collaborating, learning together from and with each other. I is for in practice. We cheated there, really. It was practical. We didn't have two P's. So it's about, you know, the teacher learning has got to be practical. It's got to lead. Of course, theories are important and reading and reflecting is fundamental, but ultimately we learn to become better teachers, and we learn for becoming more expert, if you like, so practical, but also connected with the R, that's reflective. It's about cycles of inquiry, like action research and supported experiments and things like that, where people look at theory and practice together, you know, and you theorize on your practice and your practice becomes a theory. The E, which is evaluated. So it's about, you know, robust evaluation systems in place, and you're constantly evaluating the quality and the impact of your CPD program. Have I done well, teacher?
You've done really well. Very useful in terms of a mnemonic for teacher development, indeed for teaching itself.
And I think one thing I'd like to say about that is that it's basically a summary of systematic reviews and meta-analyses of what works in CPD. So we're not inventing anything new. We're just basically finding a way of making it amenable to CPD leaders and CPD providers and schools.
Very, very useful. Thank you. I think we better call it a day there, Silvana. There's been a plethora of ideas there, a real powerhouse of imagination, creativity and commitment to the industry. And I thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Well, I get bored easily, so that's it, really. It's about keeping myself interested and motivated. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Silvana, for joining us. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, what are you going to do with that, listeners? Maybe you've just listened for interest's sake, but if you feel called to action like me, you'll probably reflect further and digest before adapting and implementing in the context of your workplace. Personally, I'd like to experiment with both supported experiments and lesson study. It strikes me that Silvana is a master of bringing together and synthesizing ideas to make them work. But it also strikes me that we can all do the same and be inspired by an idea and make a positive step, however large or small. And we don't always have to get it right the first time. So let's study, let's experiment. Thanks for listening. And like us if you like us. And if it piqued your interest, please generate a bit of chat on either Twitter or Facebook at TDSIG. Bye for now.